Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest this evening is another return guest, Guy English. Guy, thank you for joining me.
It's always fun. You know how much I love this show. It's good.
I never tire of hearing about it, though. A few people tell me how much they like the show, so whatever someone does, I'm very excited.
Well, I've told you this privately, but I don't know if I expressed it this way. This is definitely my favorite Star Trek thing, because just once a week, you have... Your show is like a Star Trek episode, in that you just go and you have a different adventure with somebody different every week, and on occasion, you visit... You know, like a recurring villain, like me.
But, ooh, what recurring villain would you be, Guy?
Romulans. It's got to be Romulans.
That's always the right answer.
Yeah, they're awesome. Anyway, yeah, it's always fun. So
well, thank you. For
lovely
that.
To have you back.
I was only slightly fishing for compliments, so thank you for engaging in that clearly self-serving conversation. Speaking of self-serving, Guy, why don't you tell the people about yourself?
That's a good question. I don't really know. I do the Speedy Arrow podcast with Dan Morin and Jonathan Moltz.
Those rogues.
That's mostly it. I am a software developer for a large company. That's basically all you need to know. Yeah.
Ask no more questions.
And I like to hang out around the Incomparable gang.
Who doesn't? Lots of people don't. I will admit, I watch all the DC Universe TV shows.
Oh, you do? I didn't know that. Okay.
I do. Well, I should, with a caveat, that I am way behind on Arrow. I am caught up with almost everything except for Black Lightning many, many, many episodes behind on Green Arrow. Or just Arrow. It's not the Green Arrow. Well, there you go. That's our superhero sweep for this episode of Random Trek. I also enjoy Black Lightning, but I am behind on that. So
That's it. That's a terrific show, one that I don't necessarily feel competent to really talk about.
Yes, indeed.
In it, like the experience and the lives of those that set of characters is not something that I am familiar with, so I really have a hard time just talking about the show. But it is wonderful, and I really enjoy watching it. I just don't feel competent to comment on it, really.
Neither do I, but I do enjoy the fact that it is completely different than the other of the lineup. So, and it's coming at it from a very different angle, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
And I like his lineup costume. So there you go.
Yeah. The costume's like totally out of whack. Yeah.
I love it, how ridiculous his costume is in the rest of the show.
Their villain, Krondon, is amazing.
Yes. Very, very creepy. But there are no superheroes in the Star Trek universe. Just lots of competent, hardworking Starfleet officers who are just trying to get some water.
Yeah. So my question, heroes in our hearts, though.
Well, that's true. So my question, I always have a Star Trek-related question before we jump into the episode that we're going to talk about today, which is TNG's Final Mission, Season 4, Episode 9. And Guy, you've been on several times, and I've asked you many Star Trek-related questions, so I had to rack my brain to come up with something. But I came up with something that is related to this episode and is a strange question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So if you could choose to go somewhere with Captain Picard, where would you go with Captain Picard, and what would you do?
Ooh, that's a good one.
I know, and I gave you no warning, so this is just right off the top of your head.
Yeah, this is right off the top of your head. To be perfectly honest, I have an answer, and then I'm like, I don't know if I should say that. Riza, just because he's hilarious when he's hanging out with his like deep V-neck there, like just by the pool, sipping a drink. I'm like, I could deal with that. He doesn't seem like he's, of course, obviously he goes on an adventure, but he seems like somebody that would just be chill during vacation.
Yes.
And, I could get with that.
I love the fact that he goes to Risa, which is the pleasure planet, and he just wants to read by the pool.
He's just so grumpy.
And that is not what you do on Risa. That is not... Yeah. I pick up, generally, that's not what most people do when they go to Risa.
No, yeah. That's why I was debating whether to say Risa. It's just also the funnier one. I don't know. I mean, I feel probably I should say something smart. Like,
I think I that's know. A fantastic Some, answer.
Yeah. Something brainy. We'll edit. We'll get it in editing.
That's right. We'll put over a better answer than that, even though I think that is the correct answer. So I'm going to take that as my answer as well.
Okay.
I like my favorite part of Jean-Luc Picard is off-duty wardrobe Jean-Luc Picard, because it's all over the place.
It's crazy. Because it's so out of – it's incongruous with his like sort of buttoned down mm-hmm. approach to being a captain. That what? It's like I've got a V-neck going down to my belly button and I just
– He wants to let loose, man.
He's definitely letting loose.
Well, this is I've had this theory that people who listen to Random Trek know. I feel like Jean-Luc Picard joined Starfleet for many reasons, but one of the largest reasons was he did not know how to dress himself, so he just wanted to wear a uniform for the rest of his life. And whenever he has time off, it's just like, well, I got to wear something. And he finds V-necks to his navel and leather pants and all kinds of things.
I think that's quite possibly the reason that he has in his heart, but he can never tell other people.
Exactly. That's not if you asked him in an interview, Captain Picard, why did you join Starfleet? He would never say because, you know, the replicators make clothing choices too difficult.
Right. No. I mean, he would go on a grand speech about like the founding principles of the Federation and how he wants to sort of expand the human condition and learn to know other cultures. But really, that guy just...
He can't take
needs
the
a shirt. Needs, yep. to, needs a shirt to wear.
Needs someone to tell him what to wear. and I don't blame him. It's difficult. Space fashion in the future is very difficult to fathom. Yeah. So
I feel not like enough Hawaiian shirts for you, buddy.
Well, that's right. I was going to say, I think the only person that has it on lockdown is Guinan. She always looks good. Everybody else has trouble outside of the uniforms, I feel like.
Yeah. Leave it to Guinan to carry off that giant hat.
It's true. She looks great.
It just works. It shouldn't, but man, it looks great.
Yeah, like, no, that's good. Good hat, Guinan. That's what I say. Guinan, sadly, does not feature in this episode at all. Not many people feature in this episode. This is one of those kind of two A-plot, B-plot episodes in which the B-plot is not all that exciting. And the A-plot, perhaps, could be argued is not all that exciting either, but...
Yeah.
And this episode, I just watched it, but it is most notable to me because, you know, a guy, I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a Star Trek geek. And so when I was in high school, I was involved in a club that it was called the Simulated Games Club, in which people, nerds like me, would play Dungeons and Dragons and what have you. But I was on the cusp when I was in high school is when Magic the Gathering became popular.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody was playing card games, and I rejected out of hand the card games. I thought, that's not a real game. You have to play Dungeons and Dragons like our forefathers did. and then...
Which was what? When was that? 71?
Yeah, something like that. Like,
yeah. Ancient.
Ancient. The ancient tomes. We must not disrespect them. And then they came out with Star Trek, the customizable card game. And I thought, you know what? Card game's not so bad. And the reason I am saying this is because one card in the Star Trek customizable card game, they had a variety of different kinds of card types. And you had to basically assemble a crew, and you got ships, and you had to solve dilemmas to get points. One of the dilemmas was radioactive garbage scow, which comes from this episode. There is a radioactive garbage scow.
That's great. I will admit to you and to nobody else, I also had way over investment in collectible Star Trek games, especially because I don't think we ever played it once.
What?
Like, my friend and I were like, I don't know, I couldn't be bothered to read the rules. We just like the cards.
The cards are pretty cool. I will say, I am sitting maybe 4 feet from several thousand Star Trek the Customizable Card Game cards.
Oh, that's serious business.
Yes, this is so... Many things coalesced in my life when I was in college, in the world as well. So the card games became a thing. I never... The internet wasn't really a thing before I went to college, and then suddenly it became a thing. And I did not own a computer in college, but I had access to internet-enabled computers in college, which gave me access to eBay, which then gave me access to spend money that I did not have on Star Trek cards that I could not really afford but really wanted.
Yeah, that'll do it. Yeah, I worked in a secondhand bookstore / comic store, which also sold a whole bunch of, you know, cards and stuff during the early 90s, I'm guessing. Yeah.
Yes, so I went to college in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and there was on the north side of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, was a small comic book store that I would walk to and buy card packs from in college. people are fascinated by my history of buying Star Trek customizable card game cards.
I'm going to say, I guess it's a bit telling how we feel about this episode because,
you know,
I actually like it. I do like it, but
it's
yeah.
fine. It's a Wesley episode. So depending on how you feel about Wesley, you might not like it. I mean, he plays a pivotal point, but I guess it's more of a card episode maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. It's definitely a character study episode, right? So there's, Wesley and Picard somehow through plot machinations end up in a really crappy shuttle that crash lands along yes. with an idiot.
he is an idiot, a drunk idiot. Yeah. Captain Durgo.
Durgo. Yeah.
So
yeah. All my notes say Diego because it just autocorrects and I gave up.
Oh, Captain Diego. Well, the crux of this episode is Wesley got into Starfleet Academy. Hooray! Although I don't really, I can't imagine how he would not get into Starfleet Academy, but he did. Everybody's
well, you
very
can
excited.
Because he, remember, he failed the first time.
He did fail the first time. That is true. But he finally got in. He cracked the code. I guess it's hard to get into, but I don't know.
That was another episode that made no sense because he had, what, three other people? He had that young woman who was trying out. There was that Benzite dude.
Yep.
And him. And I don't know. I think they just outperformed him or something, even after he saved that guy's life.
You would think that they would say, you know what, we'll take into consideration the fact that you've basically been running, piloting the Enterprise, which is the flagship of Starfleet.
It's like, how hard is it? I mean, Harry Kim made it in, for crying out loud. I'm sure Wesley can do okay.
Maybe Wesley does not do well on standardized tests. Perhaps maybe. That's the problem.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Harry, for the random shot. But yeah.
I appreciate any zings to Harry Kim.
Yeah, it's just a total bystander there.
Poor Harry Kim. He was not. He didn't crash land anywhere in this episode. But hooray! Everybody's very excited. Captain Picard, especially, is excited, and he's like, "You know what, Wes? As a special gift to you, we are going to go on a mission together." Which, I mean, I really like Captain Picard, so I would be excited, but it's also kind of an egotistical gift. Be like, hey, you get to spend time with me.
Yeah, he does say at the end that it was a selfish act for him.
That's true. He was afraid. He was afraid that they would never see each other again, so he wanted to spend some time with Wes.
Yeah, like the way he presents himself and like the, not the fragility, but the like his honesty later on to Wesley is probably one of the better scenes that Wesley's in.
I think that's true. And I like it. And, you know, Captain Patrick Stewart does a fine job of acting like he got crushed by a bunch of rocks. So,
yeah. Turns out that guy has some chops.
Yeah. That's right. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Okay,
Patrick Stewart.
Yeah. Do you know who doesn't know what they're doing? Geordi, who goes over that shuttle and he's like, oh, yeah, checks out. And then it does not check out. It is a wreck.
It's a bad shuttle.
Geordi's as good as his job as Starfleet security is. Like, that is just
that's true. He's like, I looked it over. You know, I think it'll be fine. Good luck. And I don't. It's unclear to me why Captain Durgo had to come and pick them up, and they couldn't take one of the many shuttlecraft that the Enterprise has.
I don't know. They said the miners had sent somebody, but it just doesn't make sense. I mean, basically. Yeah. A lot of this episode is hand-waving to get people in a situation where you want them in. And that situation is Picard and Wesley in dire straits together so that they can have a touching moment.
That's right. The crash land.
Yeah, yep. Everything else is like geared towards making that happen.
So why don't we deal with the B-plot first, which is the radioactive garbage scow, my favorite radioactive garbage scow. And then we'll talk about what the shenanigans that happen on the desert planet that the poorly maintained shuttlecraft that this captain has crash lands on. And then we'll talk about how standardized apparently shuttlecraft controls are, because everybody apparently can pilot any shuttlecraft ever.
That hadn't occurred to me, but yeah.
I'm just impressed. So the Enterprise drops them off. They fly off because, oh no, they got a hailing an emergency message from some planet whose name escapes me, but they think they're under attack because there's this vessel that's appeared and it's flooding their atmosphere with radiation and it won't respond to any hailing frequency calls, and they don't have any ships because they're a peaceful people and they're all freaking out. So off they go. Turns out it's not insidious invaders, but somebody else's environmental damage. It's a garbage scow that someone has at some point shot off into space and is now hovering over this planet, irradiating the atmosphere. And it's apparently supposed to be tense. It's not all that intense. They try to, you know, slap some thrusters on it, and that doesn't work. And then they tow it into the sun, and that's really it.
That's about it.
Nothing else happens.
Yeah. So there's a few things that I liked about it. They had a beautiful exterior shot of. Oh, actually, wait. Yeah, no, this is it. Underneath the garbage scout, looking up to the Enterprise as it orbits the planet. I thought that was a nice shot that looked good.
It's funny that you say that because while I thought this whole plot was silly, I did enjoy many of the shots of the garbage scout and the Enterprise above that planet. I thought it was like, these are the best shots I've seen in a lot of Star Trek episodes.
And I know, I was like really impressed. I'm like, this is really great. Because they've got those little thrusters that fly off and spiral into nowhere. I'm like, somebody put their A-game on this.
Yes.
Too bad the writers like took the week off.
But whoever was in charge of that garbage scout said, damn it, I'm going to make this look good.
So the bit that I did enjoy about this is that I really like Riker in command.
Yes, he has to decide, are we going to, because, you know, they set this up that, oh, no, they have to save this garbage scout. But also they get a hail from the miner saying, hey, BT Dubs, Picard has never showed up. Is he still there with you?
Right.
Turns out he's not.
Oops. No, he's not here. I like Riker in command because I don't want to see a Riker show. I just like it when he takes over every now and then. But he's a different kind of leader, right? He's decisive and he starts giving orders quickly, but he's got a softer tone.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I particularly liked is that when the radiation started getting really bad, he gets Crusher up to the bridge. And at one point, she's just barking orders about like where the crew should go to avoid the radiation, like move everybody into the inner bits, like change everything. And he just let her run with it, which I thought was great.
Well, she's the expert. So that's what he should do.
I know. It makes sense. But rather than her telling him and then him doing the thing, it was just like, you know what? You take care of this. I'll take care of my stuff. And
busy with this garbage scow.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I just liked him. And he's got that intense stare into the distance look.
He does. He's good at staring at a fake screen that isn't there.
It's pretty good. It's a skill.
Yeah. I couldn't do it. So kudos to him. And I do like when he's like, oh, we need to get this garbage scow. Why don't we just tow it into the sun? And Data's like, well, there are a bunch of asteroids between us and the sun, so we can't really do that. And then Geordi's like, yeah, dude, it'll kill us anyway because we'll get too close. So let's put some thrusters on it. And Riker's like, okay, we can try that. And it doesn't work. And he's like, okay, well, guess what, everybody? We're towing it.
Yeah. I liked all of that. Like, he's open to suggestions. I find he works more as a team. Like, Picard will go and have that conference, and then when he comes out, he's just in charge, it feels like.
That's true.
Often it is Riker on the bridge soliciting like feedback at the time.
That's true. And then Captain Picard, he kind of pre-sorts it and filters it for Captain Picard.
Yes.
And Captain Picard then makes a decision.
Four suggestions. It'll get narrowed down to two, and then Picard says A or B.
That's right. So make it so. Yeah. And then everybody does a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, except for that one where they were trapped in a time loop, and the answer was not A or B, but it was C.
That's right.
with the three pips.
Well, that's why you have to pay attention to Data, because he knows what's going on. And also, far better episode than this episode.
Yeah, a little bit.
So, the garbage scow is fine. They throw it into the sun, which I have questions about if that's really what you're supposed to be doing or not. But, hey, the sun can take it. Oh, a sun. It's not the sun, because this is not Earth.
Before not if it makes sense. I mean, how much power gets, like, zapped at you by, a phaser or a disruptor that this scow is just... This scouse is said to be putting out more radiation than you can take when you get blasted by like a bunch of really angry Romulans trying to blow you up.
Mm-hmm.
How does that? I don't understand how that works.
Yeah. It's just full of bad stuff, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, like I said, hand wavy. Like just
it's just there so that it can create this tension that oh no, the Enterprise has to deal with this. They can't run off, and they don't really explore that too much. Like the tension, they set it up, and then they have Dr. Crusher there, and she knows her son is lost somewhere, and there's like one look between her and Riker, but it's like, well, there are more people on this planet. We have to stay here for it. We can't just go. So it's not like. Anyone who's watched more than one episode of Star Trek knows they're not just going to leave. So it's not like there's much tension here.
Yeah. I did like actually that they didn't spend time with her complaining. Oh my son. She just consummate professional. Let's deal with this. There's a bunch of stuff going on. And then we'll take care of, going back to look for my boy.
And there's that good scene where Deanna is like, hey, Dr. Crusher, or else she probably says, Beverly, do you want to talk about it? And Beverly's like, no, we just need to get this done and we'll deal with it later. Which I liked, because that's the right answer. So there you go. Yep. They throw it into the star, and then, spoiler alert, they find at the end, they Captain Picard and Wesley Crusher do not die. They are saved at the end. But and now we can go to the planet where they're on this rickety shuttle, Captain Picard, Wesley Crusher, Captain Durgo. Wesley Crusher is being kind of a jerk to Captain Durgo. So initially I was not so happy with that, but then you find out Captain Durgo's kind of a jerk himself, so it's okay.
Yeah, but when I also have that in my notes that Wes is just being a real jerk. Even Picard shuts him down.
It's true, because he's like, oh, Captain Durgo introduces himself as the captain of this shuttlecraft. And Wesley's like, captain of a shuttlecraft.
Yeah. He's such a jerk. And it's hilarious when... After they've crashed, Wesley ends up whining at Durgo. You better listen to Captain Picard, because he's the one that's going to save your life. And it's like, Jean-Luc has to shut him down. He has to be like, Wesley, I've got this. Like, he knows how to, like, basically, he's definitely can take control of this guy. It's not a problem. It's his entire career is as a command officer of the flagship of the fleet. He definitely can take care of this, like, half-drunk nincompoop that's basically stranded, and it's not a problem. And, all Wesley's doing is undermining Picard's sort of command gravitas by being, like, the yappy little dog. It's just...
Yeah, you better listen to Captain Picard.
I don't need that. Thank you. It's under control.
Fine. Yeah, and I like how Captain Picard is like, Wesley, enough, and then he turns to Durgo and says, listen. You're a gifted pilot, and of course I value your input because at this point, Captain Picard's like, well, we've got to go to these mountains. We can't stay in this desert. And Durgo's like, we're going to die. And Wes is like, Captain Picard won't let us die. And Captain Picard's like, if you can think of any other option, please let me know something. Right. I overlooked. And which is a very clever kind of management style thing of right and saying, listen, I value your opinion. If you disagree with me, just tell me what your options are, and maybe I've overlooked something. And in this case, as we all know, Captain Picard has not overlooked anything. And Captain Durgo's like, well, no, let's go with your plan. It seems like it's fine. But I'm a captain too.
Yeah. We are literally in a desert in the middle of nowhere. What ideas did you have, Durgo?
What's your big plan? Maybe just stay here and die?
Yeah. Maybe your plan was... forgetting to bring the water in the first place. That really would have helped. There we go.
I did like that when he's like, we don't have any rations or water. And Captain Picard's like, are you telling me we don't have any water? And Durgo's like, I literally just told you we don't have any water.
He's so incredulous. That's like the one time he kind of cracks in his command ability in this episode. He's like, what are you talking about?
How dare you?
It's just your incompetence. I need to be picky about what we carry.
Great choice. I kind of feel like in this future world where replicators pretty much work all the time, if you're a guy who is on a, you know, he's logged 10,000 hours on his shuttlecraft and one assumes he's never been stranded on a desert before, it kind of almost makes sense not to take water up until the point at which your replicators no longer work and you're stranded on a desert. And then you think, maybe I should have brought a bottle of water.
Yeah. I do understand that. I mean, like, that happens all the time to people just in regular life. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they don't have the emergency gear they wish they had. And in a way, it goes to the competence of Starfleet, where, often the episodes are precipitated by them screwing something up.
It's true. But I think it's much more excusable for him not to have it than for Starfleet.
Yeah, exactly. But broadly, they operate at such a high degree of competence that, like, the idea that you wouldn't have basic emergency rations is just mind-boggling to them.
But at least he has medical supplies, which will come in handy later.
Yeah.
See, there you go. So they go into the desert wearing some Lawrence of Arabia style things that they fashioned out of something. I don't know what they fashioned out of. And we find out, so Durgo says, I don't have any water. But then we see him surreptitiously drinking from a bottle. And you think, hey, that guy's got water. Turns out he doesn't have water.
Not so much.
Yeah. No, he's just a drunk and he's drinking some alcohol. Yeah. And they stumble across the desert. Wes is finding some strange energy signals from the mountains. They get to the mountains fairly quickly, I feel like.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's another thing that struck me is that this episode is again, really beautiful.
It's true.
The planets that they basically crash land on, I thought that was a beautiful shot, that mm-hmm. background, because there's three of them. It almost looked like Star Wars, not to be heretical.
And the music, I feel like, is very Star Wars-y.
I thought the exact same thing. I also mm-hmm. had that note, yeah. And then when they're outside after their Durga shuttle is all bust up, that's a beautiful shot where they're like, first of all, outside, which is a bit of a change of pace for mm-hmm. Star Trek, and like they're shooting into the sun and there's like a bunch of lens flare. It looks pretty. It looks really nice. I'm a sucker for, as we were talking about, like wanting to go to Riser with him, I'm a sucker for whenever Picard has to like disheveled clothing.
It doesn't happen that often, but when it does.
The rag around his head was great and I loved it.
Yeah. And he has like that stain. He always seems to have a stain. Whenever he gets messed up, he has like a stain right in the middle of his chest for some reason.
Yeah, it's like the universal symbol that you're in a bad state because you get a little muss in your chest.
Exactly. And I will say when they showed that shot, which I agree with, it looks really good of them walking across the desert. I turned to Marisa and I said, oh, look, they've crashed into a desert in California somewhere.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you know. This is fiction, so they couldn't go to a planet that's an alien planet. So they have to try to survive to get to the mountains because Captain Picard says, we can't stay in this shuttlecraft, it'll turn into an oven. And where there are mountains, there is shelter. And it turns out he's right. They find a cave very quickly.
Yeah. He does a really good space boy scout sort of, you know, let's take stock of what we've got. Let's mm-hmm. head someplace. Like, man, he's good.
It's good. He knows what he's doing. He's had Starfleet survival training, one assumes. Yeah. He knows what you got to do. Then, of course, Boothby gets a shout-out later. Because, of course, he does. And so they find this cave. It seems like, oh, no, there's no water in it. But then they go even further into the cave. I was very confused about the geography of this cave, but whatever. To find, when you see those cartoons of cartoon characters in deserts and they see the mirage of the oasis. I feel like this fountain is right out of one of those. There's this beautiful fountain in the middle of this cave.
Yeah. You know what I love about this fountain is that, when you told me we were going to watch this episode, I vaguely remembered that Wesley nurses him back to health, but I couldn't remember what it was. And I certainly couldn't remember why this water was there and like how it was there. And it turns out there's a reason I don't. There's a reason I can't remember that bit. Nobody explains it. Nope. It's just there. It's fine.
It's just a weird, perfectly formed fountain in the middle of a random cave that has a very strong force field around it.
Yeah. Like, for no good reason. For some reason. Just because.
Yes, yeah. Multiple
It's there for the exact same reason that radioactive garbage cow is there. It's just like, do we just need both of these things? So there they are.
They're here. Don't ask any questions. And then so, I skipped over. While they're going through their spelunky adventure, the Captain Durgo drops his bottle of booze and Captain Picard says, oh, you had water all along. Or maybe Wes says that. And he says, no, it's not water. It's something from my planet. And Captain Picard sniffs it and says, oh, it's alcohol. You shouldn't be drinking this. It dehydrates
you. Did you notice what they called it?
No.
Drisky.
Drisky. Oh, no, I'm sad that you noticed.
There's bits of this, I swear to God, there's bits of this episode that I liked, and I'm glad we watched it. Because when I watch it for the show, for you, I watch attentively, like a lot more than if I were just normally watching it. Mm-hmm. And Drisky just stood out to me to be like, man, some parts they really nailed, and some parts they just phoned it in. Like,
Durgo likes to drink Drisky. What's wrong with that? Oh man, that's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed for whoever wrote this episode.
That's good bits. There really is good bits, but like
that's not
a lot
of
the scaffolding is just, you know, not great.
So yeah, they have that. They're like, ooh, Captain Picard says you shouldn't be drinking this; it'll dehydrate you. And Captain Durgo says, "I'll do what the heck I want," which is fine, whatever. And they try to figure out what they shoot the. Well, Captain Durgo says, "Well, clearly we need to shoot this force field to get the water." So he shoots the force field for a long time. Captain Picard's like, maybe you should stop. And Durgo's like, I'm not going to stop. He keeps shooting it. And as he shoots it, then suddenly this wraith, as Guy mentioned, appears and wraps his phaser in, I forget what they call it, electrical something or other.
Yeah, Spider-Man web.
Spider-Man. Yeah, basically it's like a crystalline Spider-Man web. Everyone's like, oh no, that's not great. Then I forget what happens. Durgo shoots his phaser at it again and causes landslides to come down. Is that what happened? Like something? I don't forget. Somebody fires. Oh, yes, he does.
The rocks get angry. I don't understand why that happens. But so everything starts falling, and then Picard saves Wesley.
Yes.
And takes a few rocks on the noggin.
Pushes him out of the way, and and is crushed under the weight of several styrofoam rocks, which sets
Star Trek rocks.
Yes. Yeah. Which sets it up for Wes to, you know, with the medical supplies that Captain Durgo did have, to kind of nurse Captain Picard back to health. And while he's doing that, Captain Durgo's like, dude, we have to get into this water. We've got to. And I have not steered you wrong, Wes, so you should totally pay attention to me.
Right.
Even though everything Captain Durgo has suggested has been not so great. And before Captain Picard passes out, he basically says, Wes, don't do anything Captain Durgo tells you to.
Yeah,
<I know. laughs>
Yeah. This episode has some of the best leadership from Picard. He's not ordering a ship around, but he's trying to guide Wesley very quickly and earnestly into not getting killed by listening to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, look, you can't trust him. You have to do this. Like,
yeah, you trust your own instincts. You're competent. You could do this.
Yeah, he's trying to imbue him with the confidence to not get bullied around by this guy who's clearly going to get them both dead. And like, yeah,
it doesn't work because he basically says, "Listen, if we both shoot it,
yeah,
somehow it'll collapse."
Yeah.
And
I do like that Wesley just shouts science at him, like we don't know what the anyway.
But they do it anyway, and guess what? Turns out that was not a great idea. And a wraith appears again. Oh no! And this time it wraps up Durgo, and Durgo is dead.
Who could have seen that coming?
And I guess it doesn't. Nobody. Wes does not seem all that sad about it. And then he wants to go back to nursing Captain Picard because it's getting cold, which leads me to believe that it only took them like 2 hours or something to get to this cave, because now it's nighttime for the first time. Yeah. And it's getting very cold.
Yeah. I think we should stop asking questions about this particular
That's true. We'll stop going down that light. But this, I think, to your point, Guy, that you said earlier, the best bit of this episode, as far as I'm concerned, is this scene now where Captain Picard and Wes the Crusher are stranded in this weird cave next to this weird fountain with a corpse in a crystal. And they have this heart-to-heart moment. And I liked it.
I liked it, too. I think that in a lot of ways, this sort of saved the Wesley character in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It illustrated that Picard could open up to him and be gentle with him. And specifically what he did say, it's like, I've always been proud of you. We're here. He apologizes to him. Look, I'm here because you're here because I just wanted to spend some more time with you. All of this sort of sheds a light, or allows us to go back to the previous episodes, like all the way to season one, I guess, and see Picard's interactions with Wesley in a different light, and a more kinder-hearted light. He's still not really good with, you know, people.
No.
Or kids. And I mean, he's very good with people, obviously, but like,
he's not good with kids.
He's not good with kids, and he doesn't really open, like, even when we see him with a girlfriend, it's not like he's a gushing fountain of, like, joy and love.
He's a reserved kind of guy.
He is a very reserved kind of guy. Yes, but this scene I thought was great. I think it made Wesley better and Picard better.
Yes, because Picard basically thinks he's going to die, and he wants to tell. He's like, Wes, there are so many things I want to tell you, and I haven't had a chance to. So let me tell you a couple of things. First off, talk to the groundskeeper at Starfleet Academy.
Yeah.
It's the most important
thing. My notes here say, is that the first mention of Boothby?
I don't know. It might be.
I was going to go memory alpha it, but I thought it'd be more fun if we just, you know, freewheeled it.
And then I
don't want to do any research.
Like, I don't know. But I do like Boothby, and shout out to Boothby.
I like that Wesley asks, what does he teach? And then Picard says he's the groundskeeper, which is Wes a nice touch, you know?
Yeah. And then Wes thinks, boy, you really got hit in the head hard. Why tell me, talk to the groundskeeper? There's a nice thing where Wes is like, you know, everything I've done just to try to impress you, which I think this scene is very touching. It does always make me think that their relationship is a little odd, because as we know, the reason Wesley's father is dead is because of Captain Picard.
Yeah. So that whole relationship is weird. And it had me thinking of the exact same thing. Obviously, Picard cares for Beverly a great deal.
Yes.
But you get the sense that he can never get there because he basically killed her husband.
Right. That makes it hard.
He got her husband killed, or at least he feels he did, right? I can't even remember the story. Was that on the Stargazer?
That was on the Stargazer. He was the commanding officer, and he ordered him into some sort of mission or something. So it wasn't like, he killed him himself. But
No. But it was like a, you go do this very dangerous thing.
Exactly.
Oh, and so that actually explains the girlfriend he was sent down to the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That makes sense. So you can see why he's, you know, he wants to care and loves Wesley very much, but he has to have some kind of weird professional remove because,
right,
just between the guilt and the
guilt,
like,
and
I got my friend, like a best friend, I got my best friend killed, and now I'm basically going to marry his wife and adopt his kid. He's like,
it's
a little bit too hot for him. He's like, I don't want to touch that. You know,
it's too complicated for Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah,
this man can't pick out a shirt. So how can you expect him to handle this?
I will chart stars all day long. I'm not navigating those interpersonal waters. I don't want to go there.
Very choppy. But that's what makes this. You know, Captain Picard is so. He is a great character, and he is at such like a remove from everyone. Like, he is very professional, and you tell people respect him, but he doesn't want to be your friend, right? On the bridge, like, he's not your buddy. He's not like a Captain Scott Bakula. Captain Archer a little bit wants to be your buddy.
I think that's where I was going with the Riker, actually, that he's got a little bit more friendly thing going to him on the bridge. In this episode specifically, too. Like, they're contrasting them, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Riker is much more of the, hey, we're in this together. Let's be a team right on the bridge. Captain Picard's like, we do that in the ready room on the bridge. I'm in control.
Yeah, it's going to take me 7 years and God knows how many times the universe is in peril to actually come and play cards with you. So,
that's right.
Baby steps. Really, really tiny baby steps.
He likes to ease into relationships.
Yeah, guess so.
But yeah, and then Wesley figures out how to, with using his communicator, tricorder or something, I don't know, he shorts out the shield on the fountain and everybody drinks water. Yeah. I thought it would be funny.
My notes say that he plays Game Boy really well. And that's how he saves the day.
He found out the cheat code to because they
put in the Konami code to the water fountain.
It is unfortunate when they show someone using a tricorder to do something very complicated, because all the actor is doing is like pushing two different parts of the tricorder several times, and you think, well, there's no way any interface would actually do this that he's trying to do. But, whatever he does works. Water for everybody. And I had seen this episode before, so I knew this wasn't going to happen, but I did think it would have been funny if they went through all of that and then he finds out, oh no, we can't drink this water.
I know. I thought the same thing too, because he spends a fair amount of time, a few seconds, which on screen is a fair amount of time, scanning the water after he gets rid of the shield.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just waiting for him to be like, well, that's just more Driscoll.
We found the Drisky. Still can't drink any of this.
Yeah, and it did annoy me a little bit that after he scans it, he says it worked. It's like, yeah, we saw that he really didn't.
But he's just excited
to explain that. But yeah, sure,
he's excited. And then. Fade to black. I guess everybody passes out. Everyone being Captain Picard, who's already passed out, and Wesley, who I guess passes out from exhaustion, perhaps. I don't know. But then he wakes up and he sees his mom, Dr. Crusher, and Data and Worf, and everything's fine. And Dr. Crusher says, "Picard, it's right as rain. You've been saved. Hooray!" And then there's a moment where Captain Picard is being carried out on a stretcher, and he reaches out to Wes and says, "You will be missed." And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, so you know what? I still don't think I've rolled a total stinker on your show.
This is not the worst episode of Star Trek I've seen.
Not the worst. There's some good bits, and I am trying to find nice bits out of it. I like what it does for the characters. I like if you forget what the setup is about, there are some nice character moments in here that I appreciate.
Yes, I mean, not a lot happens in this episode. Like you said, it's more of a character study. It's more concerned with the relationship of Captain Picard and Wesley Crusher and showing kind of the journey that Wesley Crusher has gone through and how Captain Picard has kind of acted as his kind of mentor and kind of shaping him, because you also kind of get the feeling that in the beginning, Captain Picard kind of surprises Wesley that he's gotten into Starfleet Academy, right? And
because he does the grumpy thing, like, right, you're 10 minutes late. Like, he's playing to type because he knows that he's basically a jerk all the time. So he's like,
we should be on time. But then he says, oh, this won't help you cut it in Starfleet Academy. And then Wes gets on, oh, I got it to Starfleet Academy. And they don't say that Captain Picard pulled strings to get him into this class of Starfleet Academy. Like, they don't come out and say it, but I feel like he did.
I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, I'll go with that.
Because, if Captain Picard can get somebody into Starfleet Academy, I'm pretty sure he can. I mean, he knows the groundskeeper, so.
Here's the thing. This is what, season 4, episode 9?
Mm-hmm.
9 episodes ago, Captain Picard was trying to destroy the entire Federation as a Borg.
Well, that is true.
So,
but they seem to get over
you,
that very
you'd
quickly.
Think pull, yeah, you'd think his pull at Starfleet Command is like, you know what? I don't know if I'm going to trust you with this kid. But so.
Well, maybe that's what the Starfleet Command is like. Geez, we really need to get everybody off the Enterprise. Yeah, just
reassign everybody off of the Enterprise just and just slowly, leave it to him.
Yes. And then let Captain Picard do whatever he's going to do.
We didn't take your ship away from you, Jean-Luc. It's all yours, but it's kind of a lonely place.
And Jean-Luc is like, finally.
Yeah.
All the time.
Finally get some peace and rest without a baryon sweep going on.
Exactly. And he's left his saddle. But yeah, I mean, I think that this episode is fine. It's not super great, but I wouldn't recommend. If you're listening to this podcast for some reason and you haven't watched the episode, I don't know if you really have to go see it unless you really are into, like Guy said, it's a beautiful episode. I think it's one of probably the best looking Next Generation episodes, like a random middle of the season Next Generation episode, certainly,
yeah.
That I've come across. But it's a little light on the story, more to do with the characters' interactions and letting Riker command the Enterprise for a bit.
Yeah, which is always a bit of fun for me personally. It's fine. So the last time he was in command was obviously the beginning of this season when he was trying to blow up Borg yeah. Picard, Locutus. And not only a few episodes later, he's again being like, well, whatever, Picard's off on his own.
It's fine. Well, Picard has bounced back from a lot, so I feel like...
He really has.
Riker has some faith, and it's not misplaced.
No, it's definitely not misplaced. It's just kind of funny. Anytime that Riker gets to command the ship, I enjoy it because it's brief.
Yes. Riker, and Riker's an interesting character. I mean, I think all the characters on The Next Generation are pretty interesting. Riker's interesting in that for several years he's refused to be promoted because he likes being under Captain Picard's command. And so that makes it interesting to see when he has a very brief moment to be in command. You can see, this is probably me reading into it, but you can see the characters kind of like, I can do this, but I don't know if I want to.
Yeah, I mean, every time he gets the opportunity, I feel that he's supremely competent. Like, he was just a good captain.
You know, Riker, you should spread your wings. You can command the ship.
Yeah, that's what Shelby was saying.
That's right.
Yeah.
And
there's the other one, too, where I don't even like this one, but it's a two-parter where there's some kind of mysterious Vulcan artifact and Picard is undercover on some bad guy's ship.
Oh, right.
And yeah, right. So Riker was basically in command for that two-parter. And that was fun, too. Well, I liked his part of it more than Picard's part of that one.
I like it when anybody else is. I mean, I like when Captain Picard's in command, obviously. But I also like that episode where they had Data was in command. They were doing the war games, and Data had his own.
Oh, that
ship.
Was great! Yeah, that was really, really great. Yeah,
I thought that was a good episode.
Yeah. So you know what?
Just watch those episodes.
We've taken the your premise of random Trek and we've broken it because it's not about the episode that you randomly picked. Now we're just going to talk about random other episodes of Trek
whenever. That we like better than this.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think that might be a sign that are done talking about the final mission. Guy, thank you so much for joining me.
It's always a pleasure, Scott. Keep up the good work.